This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio. Yes, it
brings. Audio cut of the day coming up before the hour is up. We have a roundtable tomorrow. It's going to be a good one. A lot to talk about. I started the show with this. This is crazy. You have now the county clerk in St. Louis County that's being charged with a felony because they're alleging Wesley Bell and Sam Page is alleging that she, I guess, doctored the paperwork of Dennis Hancock when he was, I don't even know what the allegation is, it's just ridiculous. Dennis is a St. Louis County councilman. He tried to hire his stepdaughter, I think it was, and then they tried to kick him off the council. And this thing just accelerated because Wesley Bell's office took it to a grand jury yesterday. So it's nuts. We're going to talk about it on the roundtable tomorrow. Also tomorrow, all the regular stuff from the 4 o'clock hour. My friend Paul Hall in entertainment. We got Cusimano here. Ian Scher on some tech stuff and our music. Journalist Tim Sommer will be here as well. I found this in Real Clear Investigations a couple of weeks ago, and some other people have written in the aftermath of John Murawski's investigation about civics. It seems like civics is making a comeback in higher education. Now, when I hear that, I'm a little nervous, but maybe we can turn some of this around with the left-wing indoctrination. John Murawski is with us this afternoon. Hi, John. How are you? Welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So let's define civics first and foremost, because we're not talking about high school here. You're kind of focusing on higher education, right?
Right. So civics in higher ed may include some of those elements that you think about, like, you know, branches of government and the history of the country. But it dwells much more into the underlying intellectual ideas that give rise to the institutions and the debates of the time. So you're reading the Federalist Papers, you're reading John Locke, you're reading John Stuart Mill, you're reading, you know, basically philosophers and political philosophers and moral philosophers and related works, rather than just, you know, blackboard lessons about branches of government.
I guess I might say, you know, it's been a little while since I've been in college. I'm like, gosh, I didn't know all of that went away.
Well, you know, it never completely goes away. But it recedes into, you know, hidden corners of the universe. So if you go to the right college, if you find the right professor, you can take these kinds of classes, but they're not mandatory. They're not widespread. They're not universal. And so you have to work to find them. There are certain places dedicated just for the proliferation of these ideas, like, for example, Hillsdale College, which is a private university, takes no government funding. And that's all they do. But they're not really integrated into a university. So you have basically, you know, Hillsdale College is largely, you know, will be largely conservative Christian students. So if you're studying radical feminism, you're not going to be exposed to what's at Hillsdale College unless you take a long bicycle ride to get over there. Whereas imagine placing these civic centers, they're not, I wouldn't consider them to be replicas of Hillsdale College, although some of them might come closer to being like Hillsdale College than others. But for example, what you have at, you know, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, that's much more ecumenical than Hillsdale College. You have, you know, contemporary debates about pronouns, transgender politics, yeah, that kind of stuff, critical race theory, reparations. There's different emphases at different different programs. Some of them are more focused on like economic liberty and free markets, but some of them are much more, just what you would think when you took a humanities class 20, 30, 40 years ago, which is just the great books, the great ideas and things like that.
So you in your reporting at Real Clear, you said some warn against the natural temptation to hire faculty based on political beliefs and wage warfare against the woke machine and thereby risk becoming right wing echo chambers and alienating professors and students. The quote you have is from a Harvard historian who says the solution to politicization on the left is not politicization from the right. And I would agree with that. However, here's where I would come down. Let's talk about the faculty that is hired that is trusted with the civics education. And I guess my question would be, can they be trusted with the civics education?
Well, I think it's going to vary from program to program and from university to university and, dean to dean. And so some of these civics programs might end up looking a lot like Hillsdale College, basically kind of like Republican Party recruiting operations and training for, you know, basically for street level or, you know, or regulatory, legal and political engagement at a political level. But some of them, I think, are going to preserve the spirit of, you know, intellectual independence. And there'll be just to be a variety. I think in the same way that you can go to some English literature departments and study something that resembles literature,
right?
And other language departments is essentially will be, you know, you'll be essentially involved in a human rights tribunal prosecuting texts for crimes against humanity or for legitimizing crimes against humanity. So there's a variety of English departments. There's a variety, you know, math departments, business departments differ. Some of them are, you know, economics departments. Some of them are liberal. Some of them are conservative. You know, University of Chicago economics is known as conservative. I think Yale's, Harvard, probably known as liberal. So I think you have that. You just have the natural variation that you have in academia already.
But John, are the universities, like you focus a lot on North Carolina, is this coming from a demand for that type of education from the students? Is it coming from a different place? What's the motivation for it?
Yeah, I mean, the motivation for it is that the modern academy has been essentially hijacked, or the humanities and the social sciences have been hijacked by professors who we would call them, you know, we could call them woke, or we could call them post-structuralist, or we can call them postmodernist, but they're largely focused on critiquing systems of power. And critiquing systems of power is not critiquing themselves. It's critiquing conservative politics or traditional or just Western, you know, the Western civilization, patriarchy, things like that. So they are in the business of critique. And there isn't really a vibrant tradition of studying Western literature, Western civilization from a non-hostile perspective, but from a more sympathetic perspective.
Yeah.
Now, you have to remember, though, that Western civilization is not a singular narrative. It is largely a very embittered debates between philosophers, politicians, writers, poets, artists on what it means. You have to see it as a family squabble, to the point of people being disowned and estranged from each other. And the postmodernist tradition, or this, you know, critique tradition, including Marxism, is kind of part of the Western tradition. So the question really I think you're asking is, to what extent can you do Western civilization, and how would you incorporate Michel Foucault and, you know, Judith Butler, the queer theorist, and Karl Marx and a long tradition of Marxist philosophy into the Western tradition, because they are a part of the Western tradition in their own way. So the question is, are you conceiving of the Western tradition by exempting entire branches of intellectual and philosophical inquiry, or can you incorporate them?
Well, I think incorporation, I understand, you know, with all of this in higher education, I think I've said before, you don't want to teach the 1619 Project, teach the 1619 Project, but where is the other perspective, right? There should be another perspective, and there doesn't seem to be any.
That is my gut feeling and my instinct as well. Is my suspicion is that much of what the reason you hear this word indoctrination, that students are indoctrinated into social justice ideology, because they are taught critical race theory and queer theory and post-colonialist theory as a kind of catechism. There isn't really a critique of it.
That's right.
They get to do the critique of the other side, but no one gets to do a critique of them. They are sort of inviolable and sacrosanct. So what I think would be fascinating is teach these subjects the way we teach Freud, or the way we teach Aristotle, or the way we teach Jung, or the way we teach, you know, any of a number of, you know, Wittgenstein. They're not taught as holy writ. They're not taught as gospel. They are critiqued, and we learn about, you know, Wittgenstein and his detractors, or Wittgenstein and his critics, modernity and its discontents, right? So we should also do Judith Butler, all the people who think Judith Butler is crazy. And we should also do Michel Foucault and all the people who think Michel Foucault has done a tremendous amount of damage. So that would be my preference, not to erase them from the historical record, but to pair them in a kind of dialectic with their critics.
I just don't know. Yeah, and I agree with you. I just don't know if you can have, like, could you have the modern day academia university professors handle both sides of that? I have, you know, every once in a while, well, quite often I have contributors to this show. My friend Scott Jennings comes to mind, who teach, you know, semesters at Harvard, and they'll do it with, Jennings is on the conservative side, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but they'll do it with someone else, you know, that was in the Obama administration or someone like that. So they're both teaching at the same time. And I think that could be very valuable. I mean, you got interesting exchanges, different perspectives. But you're not going to put two professors in a room for every class.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not on these campuses. I'm not in the classes. And I assume that some of this takes place to some degree. But I think that it's not a kind of living, vibrant tradition. I tend to think that it tends to be the exception. So
yeah, I think you're right.
The thing is that you're trying to get at, and I think that these critics get at, and I is... Are we going to just have two silos and two echo chambers living in parallel universes, or is there going to be any way to cross-fertilize? And they do have, you know, the civic centers do more than teach courses. They do K through 12 teacher workshops, trainings and courses, summer academies. They run high school essay contests. They have speaker series, lectures, conferences, roundtables, symposia. They have reading groups. So they they do engage in in the public arena,
right,
in the marketplace of ideas. The question is, you know, to what extent and how vibrant that's going to be. Sorry, I have a cough.
No, you're fine.
Yeah, I hope you can kind of edit that out. But anyway.
Well, it's live radio, but I get it because I had a moment last week where I couldn't even breathe, so I get it. No, but you're right about that. Look, this is a fascinating topic, and I certainly wish you're addressing academia here, higher education, but I do think that more civics, this is a different investigation, different topic, but more civics in high school with a foundation might also play a role here, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so the civic centers, many of them are involved in K-12 teacher workshops, teacher training. And they run, they even have courses, you know, they may have a week long or they have, you know, graduate level courses. And the idea is to reintroduce traditional modes of learning into in high school, because once the students get to college, they really haven't been exposed to this. And their idea is that they need to be that the proper, you know, intellectual posture towards reality is to be in a posture of a relentless critique of systems of power, and systems of power tend to be defined by genitals and by skin complexion.
Yeah, right.
And they basically tend to be reduced to immutable characteristics.
Yes, you're right about that. John, awesome work here. I love the conversation. You have a great Christmas. Happy New Year. We'll have you back in 2025.
Thanks again.
All right, take care. That's awesome. Look, this is, I want to talk about something here that's got a little crossover, and I addressed it earlier in the show. It's interesting because media, I think, plays a role in this as well, because you have so much one-sided journalism. And I'm very disappointed I can't talk about this, but I mentioned it yesterday. I was given some audio from a journalism class at the University of Missouri the day after the election. And the professor, I won't even give too many specifics here because this became controversial, but the professor in the class, here's a quote, "Democracy is so stupid. It's an idiotic system," right? And this was the day after the election. So I get the audio and I'm told that I can play it, but there was some, we'll just say, communication errors, and I didn't end up airing it yesterday. I did tell a story about it, but in all of this, I reached out to the dean of the journalism school of the University of Missouri, my alma mater, Bachelor of Journalism 1986, broadcast journalism. So I expressed, when I sent him an email, I said, look, you may want to comment on this because you should be aware of this. Then I told him that we're not going to air the audio because, again, the parent freaked out a little bit, understandably so, doesn't want his kid retaliated against if it gets out, all that. But the point of my conversation here is I had a really good conversation about media influence, left-wing media bias with the dean of the journalism school. And I was rather impressed with it. And he actually invited me to follow up with a visit to Columbia, and maybe we're going to sit down. I feel a little alienated from my journalism school. I graduated there. I was in Columbia from 83 until 96. I graduated 86, but I stayed and worked in radio. And there was a point in my, you know, career where I was invited to the J School in Columbia to, you know, sit in on classes, offer perspective. But then I started doing talk radio in 1992, and I was doing that in Columbia, Missouri. My politics were very known, and boy, the invites really, you know, They stopped. In fact, there was a kingmaker at Mizzou. For people who went through the broadcast sequence, you know who this guy is. Kent Collins was his name. And if you wanted a TV job in any market in America, if you sucked up to Kent Collins or if you did the right things, he was going to help you find that job if you were someone that he liked. Everybody liked this guy. Everybody loved this guy. He died a couple of years ago, and man, the accolades. I'm the guy that didn't like him. I'm the outlier here, which I often am. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is that when Kent was a professor for me in 1985, I'm guessing, in a producing class, television producing class, he literally did not show up to class on a couple occasions and let us just all sit there because he had this independent consulting work that he was doing. Well, then my politics came into play, and he, you know, in my opinion, he's not here to defend himself, was completely unwilling to help me because of personal reasons and my politics. And I think that sucks, but I don't really care. I never wanted a TV career anyway. But my point is that even back then, I knew that there was bias that existed. But the conversation that I had today, and what I did was I shared with the dean of the journalism school this Vanity Fair piece that is out this week that Scott Jennings shared with me, because the owner of the LA Times reached out to Jennings over the summer because he had been on CNN and defending Trump and conservatives and said, hey, we want you to be a part of our editorial board. Scott's written columns at the LA Times for years, and he invited him, the owner, to be on the editorial board. That's actually going to take place in 2025. And I think that's encouraging because we haven't seen any shifts in media like that. That's a major shift to have a conservative and a pretty big name on a major newspaper, a major daily, which is certainly not right wing, editorial board. So I guess I'm a little hopeful, and based on the conversation I had today, that maybe some of these things are going to at least be explored in the future, but I'll keep you posted on all that. I'm still disappointed I can't play the audio because, man, it's really gold. It really is, but I promise not to.
Get more at 971talk.com.